Chapter 21. The Bhavali Migration.
"It really feels wrong going east when the fighting is west,"
Rundal said discouragingly, as we rounded yet another bend in the river. Up ahead was the dock of the next pissant village. Was it Knockley? Borlin? Dusine? Borlin, I realized when I saw the faded Swan and Torch banner on the dock. We'd passed Knockley an hour ago. I was starting to get used to the river route to Sevendore, to home.
"I am not eager for war, Master, but with dragons in the air, are you certain we can be spared?"
he asked for the fourth time that day. "Absolutely," I agreed for the fourth time that day. "If Astaroth, Taran, Azar, and Turlaman can't handle it, what makes you think you can?" He looked at me thoughtfully.
"You make a compelling argument, Master,"
he conceded. Then he continued in a low voice.
"Tyndall would have insisted he was as good as they."
"Perhaps he thinks he is,"
Bannermore suggested as he approached the bow.
"And I admit I'm more than half jealous of his talent and yours, but I know more spellcraft than you do, boy, and I'm a foot wizard."
He wasn't being judgmental about it. Bannermore was just stating the obvious.
"You've apprenticed a few years, lad. You still have a long way to go before you or Tyndall are up to fighting dragons. It's been an eventful year, and few have risen so quickly. But take a breath and enjoy your youth while you have it. Don't waste it prematurely on the battlefield."
"I'm a knight's magi," my apprentice said uncomfortably.
"By courtesy, not by skill," I said. "So, no, you aren't going west to play with goblins. You have to stay in Sevendore for a while, and learn a few more spells, at least."
"As you wish, Master,"
he said, relieved. I felt for the boy, but Bannermore was right. He'd been pressed into service in Beauval and Timberwatch because of need. As dire as things were in the Riverlands, a barely trained mage with a witchstone would be more hindrance than help to my colleagues. Even Tyndall knew that, somewhere. I was surprised to hear Rundal feel so guilty about not going to war, but I suppose he felt pretty useless right now. I wasn't exactly pleased to be heading away from danger myself, even if it meant seeing Alia and the baby in a few days. I was responsible for the war effort, and even though sending a few dozen new war magi into battle was a bold response, I still felt as if I had sat next to the road while the armies passed by. In an hour, less if the spells propelling the boat against the current continued to work as they had, I'd be back in Sandaria Port. In 2 days, I'd be back at my gleaming white castle. That seemed a more appealing prospect than a military campaign, but it still felt cowardly.
"So what was the consensus of opinion amongst the footsore, Bannermore?"
Rundal asked, changing the subject.
"Was the small council a success?"
The foot wizard smiled.
"Spectacular. This is the first time in living memory we foot wizards were treated like something other than criminals. An entire college devoted to us? We're honoured. Most of us," he amended. "There were some who resented being treated like poor cousins."
"Foot wizards are poor cousins,"
Rundal snorted.
"No offence, Bannermore, but—" "Oh, you aren't offending me, Sir Rundal,"
the older man assured him. "I have no illusions about my abilities, but there are those in my profession who see their power as a reason to demand respect, and often it is those with the least talent who demand the most."
"It isn't any better at the lordly end of the table,"
I observed. "You do know what they call the student at the academy with the absolute worst marks on graduation day?"
"No."
"What?" the self-taught wizard asked, curious.
"Mage," I answered simply. "Once they're chartered, they'll charge just as much as the best students and expect you to kiss their asses for the privilege, and they're the first to demand the privileges of their rank. That's one good thing about reorganizing magic. Weeding out rich idiots is going to be half of this job."
"But some of your choices for Irionite seem to baffle,"
Bannermore said diplomatically.
"You mean I handed some out to rich idiots?" I chuckled mirthlessly.
"Well, if it makes you feel better, they were all very useful, rich idiots, in their way. Now the order is flush with coin, we have officers and organization, and we probably won't embarrass ourselves at the coronation."
"That would explain it then," chuckled Bannermore. "Mage Lord, I might envy your power, but I don't envy your responsibilities."
I hate politics, I agreed sullenly. I continued to hear Bannermore's report about the world of the Foot Wizards, and who among them were the most vocal against the new institutions, and who were the most supportive of them. He spoke until the Sindaria Docks banner came into view, which sent the entire barge into a tizzy. The captain looked a little grumpy, which I thought was odd. We'd made outstanding time, especially against the current. Then I realized that he was grumpy because he was losing his magical means of propulsion, which had given him almost 2 days' worth of additional speed. I suppose I couldn't blame him. Upriver trips are always more expensive, and when the fare actually gives you a competitive advantage, losing it would sour me, too. Still, he took our coin at the agreed-upon price, he arranged for porters to unload our baggage, and he assured us that our trade would be warmly welcomed if we ever had need again. Sindaria looked like it had when we left, if a little hotter and a little drier. It would take a while for us to retrieve our horses from the livery stable, transfer our baggage to a wain hired for the occasion, and prepare for the final leg of the journey back home. And we had to catch up with the final batch of Bovali refugees who had arrived the previous day. There were only 500 or 600 of them, but they were the most frail and least hardy among the Bovali survivors. Oldlings and younglings, the sick and the wounded, plus a smattering of the hale and hearty to keep them organized. They had made camp in the back lot of a lumberyard that had seen little enough traffic of late, and that's where we found them that afternoon. Sir Ronsel, one of the landless country gentleman knights Sire Cousy had attracted to his mountain keep, was technically in charge, an intelligent enough fellow who commanded at least some respect among the Bovali. But the peasant folk tended to look more naturally to Zagor, one of the few surviving Bovali spellmongers, for leadership. Zagor was, like Bannermore, an unregistered mage. But while Bannermore had made his living as an itinerant foot wizard, Zagor had taken his talent to the tree folk, who had taught him a simplified version of their own spellcraft, and had given him the largest piece of Irionite I'd seen until the tree folk had built my own witch sphere. But Zagor was not the kind of man who abused that power, or even used it to enrich himself. He had an almost religious awe and respect for his smooth, egg-shaped witchstone, and only used it at great need. He could have built an empire with that stone, had he chosen. Instead, he had made a home in the mountains where he patched the wounds and healed the sick of his fellow villagers, until the goblins came and turned business spotty. When our returning party managed to find them in the unused lumberyard they had encamped in, Zagor, Sir Ronsel and a few other leaders of the refugees were gathered around a fire of bark and sawdust, planning their next move. Our arrival spawned an immediate, joyous response in the people. Before I knew it, I was surrounded by old women and young girls, both of whom tried their best to kiss me to death. Even Rondal was greeted warmly. His previous master hadn't made him terribly popular in Bovall, but his appearance with me had redeemed him somewhat. I finally got everyone calmed down, used a cantrip to augment my voice, and gave them a brief speech about how glad I was that they had made it and how much they would enjoy their new home. They were just grateful to see familiar faces and know that their long journey was almost done. I couldn't blame them. Most of them had been living on the run for a year now. The leadership was just as happy to see us. They had used nearly the last of the coin I'd sent for the purpose to rent the lumberyard, and they were discussing the possibility of making the last leg of the journey on foot, baggage on their backs. Our arrival kept them from that, at least. I had enough coin to hire another score of wains to transport the few goods they'd managed to collect or retain. Sir Ronsel, a man just a few years younger than me, had assumed leadership of the column and made the kind of report I expected from a country knight, replete with his own diligence and hard work, his victories and his glories, and very little of actual import. Still, his long-winded briefing told me the essentials. Eventually. Nearly everyone from the Bovali's temporary camp in the south had made the journey. A few dozen families had stayed, having made fresh lives in Limwell, or had moved on to find distant relatives in the east. The rest had piled into barges and made the 3-week trip upriver. According to Sir Ronsel, they had apparently been singing his praises the entire time. How was the journey, really? I asked Zagor, when I finally got him alone, around dusk. He shrugged. Zagor rarely got excited about anything.
"We lost 4 on the way, and gave their bodies to the river. 2 babies were born. There was a duel 2 weeks ago, but Sir Ansel is a fair man. Once he understood he needed my wisdom, we were able to guide the folk here without difficulty."
I had no doubt that the conversations establishing just how much he needed Zagor's wisdom had been terse and tense. Once Zagor made up his mind on something, he was nearly unmovable. "We will find places for you both, and reward your good service," I promised. That didn't seem to impress him, but the prospect of the journey being over did.
"I just want a cottage of my own," he insisted, "and some dogs."
Zagor loved his dog, Blue, but he had perished in the siege. He looked incomplete without the shaggy brute around. "Then dogs you shall have, my friend, and more responsibilities besides. A new village will need a new spellmonger," I reminded him. He grunted in satisfaction.
"It will take time to learn its ways," he said wistfully.
"We all miss Boval," I assured him, "but it's gone. We have a chance to rebuild what was best of it in Sevendor." That seemed to mollify him somewhat. So did seeing me. After the initial excitement faded, I started getting pelted with complaints about the trip, the accommodations, and every petty argument that had broken out since they'd left the south. I dealt with those as best I could until it was long past nightfall. Near midnight, I finally persuaded my companions to head back to the inn, where I enjoyed the luxury of a straw tick and candlelight, while my subject slept on the cool ground by starlight. I suppose I should have felt guilty about that, but I didn't. The next morning was spent loading wagons and buying supplies, checking in with my order with the local spellmonger, and preparing for the final leg of the journey. By noon, our caravan, including more than a score of wains and hundreds of peasants on foot, was making its way south through Sandaria. It was pretty country, and the Bovali were intrigued by the new land. The Sandari peasants, on the other hand, just looked wary. We were near to the frontier of Sandaria when we happened across a much smaller party, headed in the same direction, just as the sun was starting to dim. It turned out to be one of my neighbours, Lord Sigalan of Trestendor, on his way to a Sashtalia market with a dozen of his folk. I had yet to meet Lord Sigalan, but Bannermore had made his acquaintance, was on tolerably good terms with the man, and was eager to make an introduction. Fortune, fate, or the whims of the gods had placed us together. It proved an important meeting. Sigalan's folk looked much like the native Sevendorian dress, although I found them more prideful and less servile than my own subjects. They were frequently casual with their liege, even in my presence. I found it interesting. Sire Sigalan wore battered antique armour, a surcoat with his device on the breast worn over it. Only 2 other mounted warriors were with him, but several of the Trestendori had bows. The lord of the land was tall, at least half a head taller than me, and skinny. He shaved his pointed chin and thin lips, but wore his sideburns long enough to braid. His eyes were bright blue and burned like ice when they flashed with intensity. Otherwise they seemed made for laughter. He was a reserved fellow. He was cautious with his words, but they were all well-chosen and polite. He remembered Bannermore fondly. Apparently the two drank together in the past, and after the foot wizard introduced us, while our people made camp for the night and prepared supper, I learned a lot about the country knight and his small country. Trestendor had been a prosperous land once, until Westflaria and Sashtalia had conspired to raise Sire Sigalan's most lucrative estate, Ferendor Village, and seize its lands in conquest. We were not far from the site of its ruins now. Confined to his tiny keep and his 1 small village, Sigalan realized the folly of attacking his neighbor in reprisal with his weak forces. There were fewer than 2 dozen men-at-arms stationed at his remote keep. He could have gone into debt hiring mercenaries to try to prosecute the war, but he was wiser than that. He was building his strength and biding his time. But the thirst for revenge and to reclaim his stolen lands was great in Lord Sigalan.
"That's why I've made this trip," he explained.
"We will pass quietly through Sashtalia and meet with our suppliers beyond. There we shall take delivery of 50 new bows with 2 score arrows each,
every shaft tipped with steel. 2 years' worth of profits to do so, but perhaps in another 5 years I'll have the men I need to retake my lands. He looked at me searchingly for a moment, and then shrugged. Perhaps you should consider such an investment, Mage Lord, he said carefully. West Flaria is no friend to Sevendor. Nor am I a friend to West Flaria, I agreed. Not since I retook my own stolen lands. I am sympathetic, Lord Sigalan. Sire Gimbal is an ass and a blowhard, but his ambition and his determination make him dangerous. More than you know, sire, agreed Sigalan with a murmur. In truth, one fact sped me to make this purchase, though we could sorely use the coin elsewhere. A month ago, Trestendor received an embassy from West Flaria. I nearly had the man thrown out, but a poor knight with noisy neighbours is wise to listen more than he speaks. I heard the knight's message, an invitation to hire myself and my men as mercenaries, to make war on Sevendor. I was surprised. I'd been involved in interdomain struggles aplenty when I was a war mage. It wasn't uncommon for a lord to hire his neighbours to make war on his other neighbours, and for the most part, the nobility didn't take it personally. But the offer stood on top of the insult of losing half his realm, and Lord Sigalan hadn't been interested. But it did make me think, Duin protect me, he said, as he drew aimlessly in the dirt with a stick. If Gimbal has both eyes on you, then he might not pay much attention to Trestendor. We are not ready yet, but perhaps his belligerence at your expense can be turned to purpose. Here's hoping, I chuckled. So Gimbal is hiring mercenaries now. That's intriguing.
That's disturbing,
corrected Sir Olsted, Lord Sigalan's aide. Olsted was an older man, wary and cautious, but eager to further his lord's ambitions.
Gimbal has always been able to rely on his own folk or his allies for his conquests in the past. Oh, he hired a score of his brother's knights when he took our lands, but that was all. If he's hiring that many warriors, Sevendor should best look to its frontiers.
Perhaps West Flaria should look to its own, said Rondal with a thoughtful smirk. I've seen Gimbal's knights. I am little enough acquainted with warriors, despite my title, my lords, but I am not impressed.
There is far more to warfare than knights on the field, agreed Sigalan,
or else I'd be buying lances and armour, not arrows and bows. The lowlanders sneer at them as peasants' weapons, but in the mountains and vales, a man with a bow and the skill to use it can bury a bodkin in a mounted lancer, and maybe more than one, before he has to draw sword. It gives us an advantage, whether it is a base weapon or not. I have not the folk, the horse, or the armour to equip more knights than I have. But knights he has, and in plenty. Indeed, there are nearly 20 encamped outside of your gates, from what I have heard.
20 knights? I asked, concerned.
That wasn't an army exactly, but it was enough to terrorize my unarmed refugees into chaos, easily enough to interdict our borders, and that had to be his intention.
Aye. He's seen your Westerners arrive for months, and it worries him.
He heard there was another group coming and vowed to stop it. While that concerned me, it also pissed me off. According to ducal law, Gimbal had no right to block the road to me or my people, and even though he had not officially declared war on me, as custom demanded, his bad intentions towards Sevendor were clear. I was tempted to raise a war party on my own and raid the raiders, but I had the well-being of old women and children and the sickly to consider. I suppose it's easier for those lords who don't look to the welfare of their folk to ride off on some mad quest for bloodlust, but I could just imagine what Alia would have to say about me doing something so dangerous and stupid. We shall have to alter our route, then, I said finally, with a heavy sigh. It will add nearly another day to the trip, but to go south into Sastalia and then into Sevendor over Cowland's Pass will keep us from encountering Gimbal's dogs.
Master, squeaked Rondal, up a mountain? These dotards and children?
Unless you can part the mountain like cheese, yes, I agreed. Sir Ansel, do you think anyone will have a difficult time climbing one little mountain? The Bovali knight rolled his eyes. The mountains in the distance in the Riverlands were smaller than the hilltops the Bovali were used to farming at the base of the Mindens. Lord Sigalan, Do you know if the Lord of Sashtalia is allied with Gimbal in this cause?
Old Trephalon, the knight said disdainfully. He's an opportunist, not a conqueror. If there isn't profit in it, he won't move from his castle. The back way into Sevendor should be unguarded.
Then we shall wake before dawn and start them on their way, I decided, while the rest of us shall engage these 20 knights and teach them the meaning of manners.
Just how many warriors are you hiding in that pouch? Asked Sigalan, with a touch of humour.
I see a few, but... Oh, I am not a mere mage lord, I assured him. I am a war mage, and I've a few stout retainers with me. Don't worry, we'll see to Gimbal's raiders.
War mage? Sir Alstead asked, surprised. Against 40 knights?
I am well prepared for such a contest. I faced hundreds of thousands of goblins. A few country knights shouldn't be much of a challenge.
I do hope my lord will allow me to attend him in this challenge,
Sir Ronsel said, hopefully. He was a young knight, eager for battle, and he'd been saddled with the responsibility of shepherding old women upriver for weeks.
If we can find sufficient arms, yes,
I agreed. Rondal and Zagor can escort the Wains to Cowland's Pass. We'll ride out in the morning and keep those knights occupied while they do so. If we can field half as many men as they, we should be able to prevail.
Sire Sigalan shook his head in amazement. You are a brave man, Mage Lord, he said finally, but foolish. If you do prevail, you may count me among your greatest admirers.
And if you don't, we'll be happy to pay for a commemorative epic in your honour, added Sir Alstead with a grin. We haven't had a good local tragic legend around here in a generation or two.
From there we segued into discussing the future, assuming I didn't get killed on the morrow. Between Bannermore and me, we managed to convince Sigalan of the wisdom of mining his special red clay, and promised to assist him getting it to market and for a good price. He was enthusiastic, once he understood what he had, what it was worth, and how he could profit from it. Bannermore graciously agreed to help set up the mining operation, and I offered whatever assistance Sevendor could lend in exchange for a small percentage of the profits and any stray magical components we picked up along the way. In truth, we could mine the hills for sympathy stones and discard the Lorden and still make a profit. After that deal was concluded, dinner was served, a wineskin came out, and we spent the rest of the evening getting to know each other and trading lies and war stories. Sire Sigalan reminded me of my old baron, in a younger version, a man more concerned with his people and their welfare than his own titles and aggrandizement. It helped that he was personally likable. He had a deep but soothing voice. He moved with careful deliberation, and despite his relative poverty, he kept himself looking lordly. And his people loved him, despite their familiarity. That alone told me he was a worthy man. The next morning, Sir Ansel and Zagor had the folk up and on the road before dawn, producing some good-natured grumbling and a lot of excited chatter from the children. I managed to draft 25 good men from the column, peasants who had learned skill at arms during the siege and were eager for a scrap. Most had swords, spears, or both, and a few had actual helms and armour. With me acting as magical core, Bannermore had wisely elected to travel with Rondal and the refugees, we had a force almost as large as Gimbal's was reported to be. If you're wondering whether or not I was worried about attacking a much larger force than mine, remind me to tell you how I once defeated a band of goblins, trolls, and shamans in the Alshari Wilderlands with just a few archers, some militiamen, and a couple of river folk. Oh, and a pot of soup. But that's a different story. As the sun was reaching over the trees, I had my little band ready, and scried out the route while I instructed my men on what they would face and what to expect. I have their positions, I said as I closed my scrying map. They have 2 small camps, one north of the road and one south. They're over 300 yards apart.
Sentries? Asked Sir Ronsel.
A guardsman on the road, one at each end. Enough to raise an alarm, I assured him.
Interesting, I said, fingering my chin. All right, let's go greet our neighbours.
Sir Sigalan, thank you for your pleasant company, and if I survive the day, I hope to have you come visit me in my domain soon.
I look forward to the opportunity, he assured me, The luck of the gods with you, Mage Lord. With a final searching look, he urged his horse to follow the rest of his column.
Master, asked Rondol cautiously, what happens when we do triumph?
Probably have a party or something, I guessed.
No, Master, he said, shaking his head. What happens when you deliver yet another beating to the Westflarians? They are attempting to hold the road against you now with 40 knights. Just what do you think they will try if you humiliate them again?
You know, that's an excellent question, I agreed, stifling the urge to reprove him for not focusing on the immediate situation. And in truth, I don't know. My hope is that we bloody his nose so badly that he'll never bother us again. But it is just as likely that we'll enrage him further.
Then why take the chance? Asked Rondon, concerned. If the people are able to get to Sevendor safely, then needlessly antagonizing,
because we have to, I interrupted. I don't really want to, but if I don't convince Gimbal that molesting Sevendor is a bad idea soon, he's apt to try something really dangerous. This way, if we fight him to a standstill, then he knows it is not an inexpensive prospect to make war on us. That might not keep him from doing so, but it will make him consider any such investment in mercenaries twice before he pays their coin.
Besides, what could be more fun? Asked Sir Ansel, as he sharpened his battered blade in his saddle. We sneak up on them, rout them, and we'll be home in time for supper tonight.
That might be a little optimistic as well, I nodded, but we can't let this blockade stand unanswered, and I'm starting to get the beginnings of a plan.